Right. So today, my talk is relaxation as a Zen practice. So we head into the holidays, and I'm hoping that all of you get an opportunity to relax to at least some extent. I mean, our local big grocery store is Winco, and like, if Winco is closed, nothing's happening, right? And there's a certain ease to that, right? Like nothing can be scheduled, nothing can really happen. So what is true relaxation and how does it relate to our practice? So just for fun, I typed Zen relaxation into the Google search this morning. And there's a Zen massage in Beaverton. And then there was other links to like relaxing music and whatever. So kind of culturally, Zen is associated with like chill, relaxation. But any of us who practice or meditate know that like not really. Like maybe little moments, but practice takes a lot of effort. So we have lots of exhortations in our practice about effort and urgency and the mind that seeks the way and all of that. Just a couple of them are like, we're exhorted to practice as if our hair is on fire. We're encouraged to recite the five remembrances to keep our practice lively and avoid slipping into complacency, which is, I am of the nature to grow old. I cannot escape growing old. I am of the nature to have ill health. I cannot escape ill health. I am of the nature to die. I cannot escape death. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. I cannot escape being separated from them. My actions are my only true belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. So we have many aspects of our practice which require energy and attention, mindfulness, keeping the precepts, sitting zazen, dharma study, working on awakening. And in the context of that also, in terms of like, if you kind of think about, all right, relaxation kind of implies you're kind of happy and comfortable and you maybe gotten what you want. And then we have also these teachings that desire is the cause of dukkha. So kind of reaching for ephemeral and conditional pleasures is not ultimately satisfying. And we know from experience, that's the simple pursuit of our desires or pleasure or comfort is not necessarily relaxing. They're not like pleasure does not equal relaxation. Sometimes they come together. Sometimes our pursuit of our desires, just complicates our life even more, makes us work harder. There's excitement anytime anybody who's like, gone on a vacation. It's kind of like, now there's like more work beforehand and more work afterwards. And like, there's, so it's not necessarily relaxing sometimes. So what is true relaxation and how does it relate to our practice? So usually when I get a, an idea for what I want to talk about, I naturally go like, well, what are the Dharma teachings on that? And like, what can I pull up, from Dogen and the Shobo Genzo? What can I go to the Access to Insight website? But, the Buddha never said, now be sure to take a break and don't work too hard. He never said, don't take yourself and your practice too seriously. So I did type relax into the Access to Insight website that has all like the Pali Canon stuff on it, Theravadan teachings. And here's what I came up with. This was, I think there was like three mentions of relax, and this was the only one that was from a sutra. You too, monks, should relentlessly exert yourselves, thinking, gladly would we let the flesh and blood in our bodies dry up, leaving just the skin, tendons, and bones. But if we have not attained what can be reached through human firmness, human persistence, human striving, there will be no relaxing our persistence. You too, in no long time, will reach and remain in the supreme goal of the holy life for which clansmen rightly go forth from the home into homelessness. So there was your word, relax. And then I typed relax into my Kindle version of Dogen's Shobogenzo, and that was only one occurrence. Priest Yi Chun never slackened in Zazen day and night from the time he aroused the way-seeking mind. During the long course of traveling and visiting various monasteries, he did not discriminate among them, but hung up his traveling staff and joined their practice. He did not relax his effort and completely perished in Zazen. Completely, like, you know, saw the emptiness of self and awakened. So, but we do have Zen Master Keizan's teaching that Zazen is like returning home and sitting in peace, from Zazen Ujinki. So it'd be, you know, interesting to explore, like, what is home? You know, when you really, hopefully we all have a home where that feels like a home. Like when you know, you've been out doing things and you come home, what is that feeling? You know, where you don't have to keep up pretenses anymore. You can get in your robe and slippers, you know, as long as there's nobody coming over to visit, doesn't really matter if it's messy. Right? You don't, you can allow the true state of your mind and body to manifest. You know, you're not trying to keep it together or maybe be cheerful or whatever. I'll leave that, just, you know, be thinking about what is home. And that, you know, so why did Keizan use that metaphor for Zazen? So one of my favorite Zen teachers, the book group is reading his book right now, Polishing a Tile. So this is Isho Fujita. And he talks about in this book, he talks about those magic eye puzzles where there's like a pattern and there's a picture hidden in the pattern, but you can't see it just by looking at the thing. You have to kind of relax your eyes. You kind of got to cross your eyes. Essentially, you got to allow your eyes to focus at a different depth than the flat surface of the image. And then, like, I don't know, you know, like a sphere will come out, or, you know, a boat, or there's crude little pictures that have been made in these things, and they look like they're three-dimensional once you see them. But anyway, he talks about how in order to see these, you can't like try to see them. You can't, like, you know, stare at this thing and try to pick out the pattern. That's not how it works at all. In a way, you have to kind of let go and relax the eyes in order for this to appear. So that's why he says our Zazen is really more about relaxation and allowing than it is a directed effort. So meditation practice. So he's fond of the Dogen saying, Zazen is not meditation practice. So Fujita says, with ordinary body mind, we first set up the goal, control our body and mind in a certain way to accomplish the goal, and make a conscious effort to make the result of our action match with the goal by comparing the two. In contrast, magic eye-like body mind. So the ordinary body mind is the body mind we would use for meditation, right? But magic eye body mind is what we use for zazen. Magic eye-like body mind is an approach of undoing what we do not need to do or what we should not do. Physically speaking, it is a state of deep relaxation with unnecessary tension totally released. Psychologically speaking, it's in a relaxed way in which the ordinary way of actively running the mind is put aside. And he quotes, Dogen Zenji called it, give up the operations of mind, intellect, and consciousness. And in his essay, Birth and Death, Dogen's essay, Birth and Death, he wrote, just letting go of and forgetting body and mind, casting them into the house of Buddha, being activated by the Buddha. When we go along in accord with this, then without applying effort or expending the mind, we part from birth and death and become Buddhas. So, you know, it's not so easy to relax. Even if that's your intention, right? It really is not, which is why this is like, we could think of this as a practice. You know, I don't have to admit, if anybody ever, you know, comes up behind me, like they're in a shoulder rub mood, they usually go like, ooh, you know, like, well, what are you going to do? Somebody might say, oh, you're so tense. And I'm going to just say, okay, now I won't be like, we end up just through our being and through habits and through karma and stuff, just holding on to tension that we don't even realize is there perhaps. So when we're working on relaxation, there's inner and outer aspects to this. We can allow ourselves to be in circumstances conducive to relaxation. And some of us don't even do that very well, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but and it kind of depends on what you find relaxing too. I really like to do stuff, to just like sit and do nothing. I don't know, I just get bored. I'd rather be out, like, you know, in my yard or playing accordion or doing something like that. But it is tricky, because then when we do these things, which are, you know, supposedly relaxing leisure activities, we can definitely engage them in a way that's not, right? Then we're kind of like, oh, I got to practice because I got an accordion lesson on Monday. I got my, look at all the weeds in the garden. And, you know, then it becomes, it's not relaxing anymore. I think walking my dogs, it's truly relaxing, because I think of that as a complete waste of time. I mean, they don't think it's a waste of time, definitely. But like, I can't do anything, right? It's just that. So it's probably good for me to do. So, you know, there's circumstances that can be conducive for relaxation. We don't need to be defensive, or we don't need to be scrambling around or whatever. But then there's also that aspect of inner relaxation of Kenwood, because we could even be really busy, but have kind of a relaxed attitude. So what is it that is relaxed? So imagine some setting in which you feel, if you want to close your eyes, you can. A setting in which you tend to feel like the most relaxed. What is absent? Notice for me, there's a absence of a concern about time. It's a spaciousness in terms of time. It's an absence of a need to make anything happen. Absence of self-consciousness. So I'm sure there's many different ways to kind of analyze this, like what is relaxation? But here's my thought for today. When we are truly relaxed, we are not worried about ourselves. Often we're worried about practical matters pertaining to self and those we're responsible for. Other times worried about our relationships or our health or whatever. And we can also be worried about our practice. So that even then we might be monitoring our own mindfulness. Kind of being conscious of whether we are practicing at the moment. So hopefully we have shaped our lives and practice into a balance, right? With some structure and some formal practice and, you know, some self-discipline. And some of us have more of this than others, maintained with a willful self-consciousness, right? I think we're all in modern society often trying to maintain some kind of homeostasis when it comes to our physical and mental health. And it's a moving target, right? And then we often hit the holidays. And like side down because we've got like family or just it's just a different count, you know, different structure. And it can be kind of relaxing, but then it also can be kind of disorienting and I don't know, not that enjoyable in a way, because all the things that kind of keep us going are been let go of. So what would it mean to practice relaxation in the midst of that? Surrendering to a different space, to a different sense of time in common with others. Allowing ourselves to see who we are without our usual activities. It helps me to remind myself that like, start them back up at some point, right? Like, and there's always like that, you know, this does connect so much to the Buddha's choice of the middle way, right? Between asceticism and indulgence. And really the happy place is a middle way, not one or the other. So we're not gonna like just relax all the time in our practice. Like, let's just relax. That's not it. But can we let go of our self-consciousness a little? Fun, goofiness, even a little intoxication. You know, can you think of that as being part of your Zen practice, right? When you are chilling with family, when you are, you know, eating too much and, you know, having a glass of wine and whatever, Can you be kind of fold that in and watch what it is that you might still hold on to? Can we go with the flow? What's the difference between just really allowing ourselves to melt into a situation versus kind of losing ourselves in a desperate way? You know, which usually doesn't feel very good afterwards. We're just kind of like, ah. Let go of the need to be productive, the need to be seen in a particular way. Let go of a sense of time. That's one of the things that I know for myself, the most restful thing is to have a day where nothing is scheduled. Wouldn't, you know, always want to have it that way, right? But it's very tempting to fill up all this space, you know, to schedule things that are supposedly relaxing and full of pleasure. But then, you know, the most relaxing thing is that sense of just like, well, let's just let this day unfold and see what happens. At a deeper level, of course, we can learn to be more relaxed all the time. You know, those very things that I was talking about, we let go of a sense that something needs to be accomplished, letting go of, you know, absorbing self-concern, kind of trusting the 10,000 things to come forward and experience themselves through the self can lead to more inner relaxation, regardless of what's happening outside. So I guess I will leave it there. We'd love to hear from people about your relationship to relaxation and practice. When you let yourself relax, what does that usually involve? Where do you feel most relaxed? Leah, and then Simon.
Yeah, so as an anxiety person, mm-hmm. my default setting is always like, ah, like this. So I've learned that if I'm going to relax, it's always better. It's not the case for everybody. Some people are like, well, if I relax too much, there's like a stop there. I have to. But not for me, because I'm already so anxious that it's like, well, okay, if I just calm down a little bit, it's way better. And what I've noticed is relaxing in Zen Buddhist practice has helped me do it better, like just accept it more and show up more and be there more, to like listen and pay attention to how my zazen is going and all that. So always that for me, always that. And also I just want to mention something someone said to me the other day. It's like, have you ever noticed that the images of the Buddha are not scowling? Mm-hmm. Just like in this relaxed kind of a topic. And I went, yeah. Anyway, that's something we noticed. So.
Yeah, which is why people put them in their gardens and on their office desk and all over, right? It's kind of a symbol of that calm and relaxation. Simon. Yeah, you're still muted.
Good. Thank you. To me, in my experience, relaxation heavily involves both mind and body, in that we carry so much stuff around with us, as you say, from assorted karma from different directions. When I first started sitting Zazen, I used to get this pain right between my shoulder blades that would just start slowly and just build until I was just sitting there, gritting my teeth, just waiting for the time that I could get up and stretch it and do this and try not to fidget. One day somebody said, try relaxing your hands. And it worked like magic. Was amazing. I relaxed my hands and I could just feel, you just feel something's right when you do it instinctively. I could feel immediately if I relax the hands, although I'm, I thought I was, holding, I've been holding a nice mudra and everything was good. But when I did that, it was like this whole band that ran right the way across up my arms and across my shoulders. And I could feel it's my back start to melt. And I just worked and I worked on that. And I worked, when I wasn't sitting, like, just doing some relaxing, silly stuff like that. And it was amazing how it just went. It just dissolved. And it has not come back again. I have no more pain in between my shoulder blades when I'm sitting. One other quick thing is that I don't consider walking the dog to be any kind of waste of time. It's an important part of my practice. So I do see if I can persuade. Come here. Do you can see anything of this? Zoom. He just makes friends with everybody. He's everybody's friend, this boy. And I mean, he brings so much pleasure to so many different people that he just goes random strangers that he just goes and drops his ball at their feet and grabs it. I'm loving it. I get chatting with them, and we all have a nice time together and hopefully spreads a little joy in the world. So, thank you.
Great Bodhisattva service, both of you and him. Jean.
I am not a dog person, as most people know. I'm a cat person, although I love all animals. I will say that when I used to walk Curly, Domio's dog, it was not relaxing. It was not a waste of time. Not a waste of time for him or for me, but it was not relaxing because since I don't. It wasn't my dog. I don't know dogs well. I was constantly on look. What did he eat? I remember one time I was walking him, and Domio, you had gone on some family vacation. It was either right after Thanksgiving or right after Christmas. He had gotten into the garbage. He had eaten bones of either a chicken or a turkey. I panicked. I texted John. I called him and left a message. And I think finally I texted you. In the end, nothing happened. But that, I was always constantly watching out for what is he doing now. But I just brought that up because the other th and just communing with animals is, to me, is not a waste of time. And then Leah talked about the Buddha's face. And when I took yoga teacher training, when we would meditate, we were told to meditate. We were told to curl our mouths up just a little bit. I can't remember if we meditated with our eyes opened or closed. I kind of think we were meditating with our eyes closed, but we were told to allow our faces to smile just the tiniest bit. What I personally wanted to share very briefly was, I think a wonderful time for me to relax, if it's not reading, because I get absorbed in my reading and I really enjoy that, but it's Zazen itself. And I think I learned this at a session early on, or possibly from you, Domio, but some teacher implanted in my brain the idea that for the next few minutes, whether it's 10 minutes, 25 minutes, 45 minutes, I don't have anything to do but sit there and breathe. That is all I have to do. And that will, as long as I'm not in any kind of pain, pain's difficult, but if I'm not, it will definitely work on me mentally and physically, just to let things go. That's it.
Good point.
I actually just want to spin off what Jinryu said. Thank you for saying that, because you asked, what's a time that you feel most relaxed? And my mind went to, oh, well, it wasn't my vacation to Japan, because I was like in charge. That's like an adventure vacation. There's a difference between adventure vacation and relaxation vacation, and this one definitely was not. So, okay, well, it's Mexico, and I'm laying on the beach, and I'm like, well, no, it's because still I'm like, okay, where are we going to go to eat? And we got to get to this place. And so there's still that anxiety. And the last place that my mind would have thought to go in answer to that question was Seshi. Yeah. And not the early days when my mind is still going, oh, I don't want to be here. This sucks. And I'm in pain. But like right towards the end, and especially when I was doing Yaza on the last night, because you want to talk about a situation where there is nothing to do, nowhere to go, no expectation, nope, nothing, no pretense, nothing. And just, it's like Jinryu said, just sitting as literally the only thing to do in that exact moment. And that was the most profound feeling of relaxation that I could have possibly had, was right in that moment. So. And the thinking mind doesn't want to admit to that. It's like, oh, session's hard. You want to be sitting on the couch watching Netflix with a, glass of wine or something. But there's still that element of something to do, and I need to get to that space of nothing to do.
Ironically, it can take a lot of effort to get that relaxed. Chill.
So the first thing I thought of when I closed my mind are these hammocks that I lay in, and it's very relaxing. And then I thought about how much I sleep in the hammocks, and I thought about, well, is sleep relaxing? I mean, it kind of is, but it wasn't what I was thinking of. So then I tried to think of, well, where do I feel relaxed that's not sleep adjacent? And I volunteer at the Portland Japanese Garden. I spend a lot of time there, and I feel like when you walk through the gate there, you just feel relaxed. Peace is usually the word that comes through my mind, but it got me thinking about like a big reason I think I feel like that is what it's the surroundings, not just the people, which is part of it, but the nature. And just like that symbiotic sort of like, I don't know if the trees are relaxed, but they feel relaxed, and how that impacts me. And then I feel relaxed, and then I'm around these other people who seem peaceful and relaxed, and you just like kind of immediately I find myself in a different state of mind. So I've never thought of it as relaxed before, but I think it is. Yeah. And I'm walking, so I'm not asleep.
Thank you for sharing. Yeah, I mean, can you say what's absent?
Well, not. I mean, thinking is not absent because I don't stroll around necessarily not thinking. I'm slower. So, like, that feeling of being rushed is absent. And just like maybe the overstimulation of regular day-to-day life. I'm not looking at my phone. There's just like sort of that busyness feeling.
Yeah, there is wonder if. Well, I guess, I mean, I was thinking, does relaxation have to, I think it can come with stillness. And I'm also thinking, like, are there certain social situations in which people feel really relaxed. I find that more difficult, generally speaking. I don't even know when I'm hanging out with like my, you know, immediate family that I'm like, I don't know. I think I've been in with groups of people before, but it's generally like, yeah. Because social stuff brings up other, you know, kind of complicated roles and relationships and kind of monitoring. How does that other person feel? And, you know, how's the situation going? And what are we going to do next? And whatever. But yeah, I think it is possible to feel in certain, like when you just feel real rapport with everybody and, you know, it's just really chill and you're going with the flow. Jeff.
Thank you. I think one thing you all made me think about is when I feel really relaxed, it's like I'm no longer thinking, am I doing this right? Like I could be, it's kind of the like lack of agenda, but also like a lack of preoccupation with thinking about how I am doing the thing that I'm doing. So I love hiking. So there is a purpose often, like you're going this way, but just moving through nature and just not getting hung up about like, yeah, like this is how I'm doing it. I mean, a lot of it is, I mean, it could be cooking. It could be like messing around with the dog. It's just those situations where like I'm self-conscious, but not preoccupied with the self that I'm being, just like digging the situation.
Yeah, so. That's a very great observation. I think I really relate to that one, which is why in some ways I hate to confess it, but like, you know, the most relaxing situation, like Zazen's not where my mind went first, because Zazen is like, it's very difficult, even though we're just sitting. But, you know, that's why the exhortations, the instructions say like, let go of, you know, judging how well you're doing, but like, am I doing that right? Am I truly letting go of, you know, we can just tie ourselves into such knots with that. But yeah, when you're like walking in the woods, it's not like, I don't know. I don't think I'm hiking very well. it's irrelevant. Courtney.
When you talk about social situations, it comes to mind that I had, and I can think of a particular situation where I was like with a group of people, like having dinner, like a long dinner, and we were like chatting and laughing and telling stories. That like the whole like being self-conscious and worrying about judgment dropped away, and I was just present with these people. And it was one of the more relaxing, fulfilling things I've done in a long time. But the other one I thought of is the first thing that came to mind was snorkeling and being like held by the water. You can't check your phone. There's nothing else to do. You're present in what you're doing. Yeah. And there's this sense of wonder and wonder and creativity are two characteristics I feel like are brought up for me with relaxation. Mm-hmm. So there's this like wonder and exploration happening.
Yeah. Nice.
I think Roseanne has something.
Yes.
Oh, Roseanne.
Thanks for this Dharma talk this time of the year. I think we can have an ease of camaraderie, especially like maybe with family that we don't get to see as often as we'd like, when we're just in the moment with them without our ego expectations or hopes. That's when I think real humor and relaxation kicks in. So when we, like I said, let the ego go. And honestly, some of the most relaxation Zazen for me is, oh, this is so beautiful, but I have to go do something, and I want it to last for a long, long time. And I, you know, that point of just delicious, just, there's nothing I really need to do that I can't extend this. So thank you for this.
Yeah, thank you. Abby, you decided not to say anything. Ember.
Hi. I just thought I'd come in because what people have shared has prompted something. I thought about, like, I wasn't going to share this, but have you seen the movie Yes Day? Has anybody seen the movie Yes Day? I'm not saying it's a very good movie, actually, but it's about some parents who decide to say yes to their children for a full day, to everything. And there's some kind of boundaries on it, but not too many. And so I did that once with my daughter when she's 12 now, and I think she was 9 or 10, and we did a yes morning. I could only handle it for like 3 hours because I thought, like, I'll just say yes to everything for 3 hours, and then we can deal with all the chaos afterwards. You know, it was one of the best 3 hours that I've ever spent with her, ever. It was so free and relaxing, and things just dropped. All of that kind of like over responsibility just dropped. We've never done it ever since. I don't know why. She does ask me, when are we going to do that again? And for some reason, I have a real resistance to it. And it was incredible. And she didn't go crazy either. She kind of like, you know, I don't know. She was quite sort of restrained in a way. Like I was encouraging her to be more, you know, like do whatever you want. So I guess the over-responsibility wasn't there. So yeah, thanks.
Yeah, that makes me think, like, you know, because I'm trying to examine, like, what are the things in any given situation which are preventing us from feeling relaxed, right? And then why am I, you know, with my loved ones kind of not feeling relaxed? Why is that? And you make me think about this. I do have this sense of kind of responsibility of trying to make things fun, right? Or trying to make the conversation go well. Or not that I really think like I'm more responsible than anybody else, but just I'm monitoring that and making sure. And yeah, what would it be like to be in that social situation and have that sense of responsibility removed one way or another? I don't know. Interesting. Cliff. I mean, Ando.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think it's fear of consequences in the future that prevent us relaxing.
Yeah.
You know, we're concerned about what will happen. And mostly the fears that we have about what will happen, of course, are in the future, so they might not happen. Mm-hmm. But we think they're going to happen, so we can't relax.
Yeah. What are we afraid is going to happen in that social situation with our family, for instance? I mean, honestly, if I look, I felt, because, you know, kids are other. It's just a brutal dog eat dog, horrible situation, social situation. And I ended up feeling, for one reason or another, because of my size, I was really, really short, but I was nerdy, whatever. I felt invisible. So I think as I examine, there's just a little faint sense that if I if I just relax, I'm just totally myself, that I just kind of won't register on anybody's social radar at all. Just an interesting thing. Just kind of like, who cares? I don't know. Like, you could ask that, you know? I mean, I don't know. Be interesting to try to go into that situation without any agenda to try to make it anyway. Jen.
I don't know if we have much time, but what you said, Domio, just reminded me of my wedding, because I was maybe 25 or something, and my mom was trying to plan it, and I was across the country from her. So she kept calling me at work to ask me what hymn I want, what flowers I want, you know. And I kept saying, Mom, none of this matters. It really doesn't. Just pick something, whatever. And then on my wedding day, I had the most wonderful, relaxing wedding. Everything was just how I wanted it. It was just beautiful. And it wasn't by accident. My mom had planned everything. She had worked so hard. And it just made me realize that sometimes somebody has to plan something for you to be able to relax, you know? And so sometimes I try to do that. And I think of like Christmas dinner or something, right? You want everyone to enjoy it, but it doesn't happen by itself. You have to do the shopping. You have to plan the recipe. Maybe you have to test the recipe, but it's kind of a giving so that everybody else can relax and enjoy it. And then you can have the sympathetic joy of seeing everybody relaxed.
Yeah, that's a very good point. It's a very good point. And make me think about kind of all the work that we put into the Zen Center, mm-hmm. you know, to make it so that you can walk through the door, virtual or physical, and feel like you can just sit to feel like you're in a warm and supportive community. Someone has to organize the session. Indeed, that takes a lot. everybody's different, and some people struggle to impose any kind of structure or discipline on their lives. And some of us, you know, have everything very, very regimented. Some of you have heard this story, but when I was, I think it was early on in my Zen life, I can't remember whether I had gotten ordained yet or not, but when I would go home to Minnesota to visit my parents and extended family, you know, I was like, I'm vegetarian and I didn't drink and not interested and all that, you know, worldly stuff anymore. And I hardly own anything and all my clothes are drab and, you know, just whatever. And, you know, I think it was hard for my family, you know, they tried to be as nice and supportive as possible and whatever. But I just remember the time that I went home and like, I went out with my parents shortly after I arrived, and then they ordered beers and I ordered one too. It was like, I had no idea that having a beer could bring people so much joy. It was like, they just relaxed because I wasn't sitting there judging them like, could you and your beers, right? Like, so anyway, I'll leave you with that little story as you go off into family land and write and just, you know, how can we relax? How can we allow those around us to relax and to really, you know, that in particular was an example of relaxing attachment to my practice, right? And to my state of mind and to my, you know, all that, which I think especially when we are going to be and seeing more family and doing that kind of thing, we're asked to do more of that than usual, to really let our boundaries soften a little bit and go ahead and do some things, which, you know, whatever, maybe not so thrilled about. So may you have a lovely holiday break, abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water. The mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita. Thank you for coming, everybody.